Hey, you crazy freaks. This is Christian. And this episode of Another Bright Side podcast is kind of special because I have Dr. Paul DeCastro on. And he's a former professor of mine at Cal State LA. He holds a doctorate of musical arts from the University of Texas in Austin. And he also got his master's and bachelor's from Cal State LA. So it's pretty cool. I went back on campus with Julian, or aka Dr. Ka. And we interviewed him. It was an interesting conversation about music, the history of music, where music is going today, and, you know, just what irritates us about music. And I really had a fun time talking to him. He's a very interesting guy, and I think you guys will too. So, I'm Christian, and this is Another Bright Side podcast. All right. Hey, Dr. DeCastro, right? Is that how you say
correct.
Paul DeCastro?
Paul DeCastro.
Wow. I haven't seen you in possibly 2 years. I took originally a class with you about Latin American history, particularly in music. Just to give listeners a background, tell us about you, who you are. I mean, where are you from originally? Because I don't think you really told me.
Yes. I actually always say it in my class.
Oh, do you?
You weren't paying attention.
I was late that day, actually.
Born in Peru. Lima, Peru.
Lima, Peru.
Yes.
Really?
And started music at age 5, like most people, you know, used to. I think that has changed lately.
Started
with
music?
Technology.
Certainly, yes.
Yeah, but it used to be if you wanted to be good at an instrument, you started at age 5.
Oh, okay,
If you start at age 8, it's a little bit late.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, people that play violin, piano, they usually start really, really early. So anyways, did basically my whole education in Peru up until I was 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
1 year of college in Peru and sociology. That didn't quite work out. So I came to the United States and I got all my degrees here at, you know, in the United States. My bachelor's is from Cal State LA.
Oh.
My master's from Cal State LA and my doctoral degree from the University of Texas in Austin.
Oh, wow. So you really love this school, right? I mean,
well, I'm familiar with it.
Oh, okay. There it goes. That's a good verbiage. Yeah.
I mean, I love the students because I was a student here, you know, but you know, as of many institutions, particularly large institutions, you know, there can be difficulties.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
What instrument did you start with at the age of 5?
Piano.
Ooh.
I'm a pianist, originally a pianist, though there's been a big change in my life, I would say, in the last 2-3 years. Because about 10 years ago, I started studying a Chinese instrument called the suona. The suona is a type of oboe. And surprisingly, I got really good. And then I've been traveling, playing the suona. I just came back from Malaysia about a month ago, where
did
concerts and classes and just... So that career is taking off.
Are you playing with like a group or...?
Well, I'm a soloist in the instrument. So what happens is either I get invited to give lectures and classes or invited to be, you know, like a guest soloist with an orchestra or things like that.
Now, I started playing piano when I was around 9, so yeah, it was too late for me. But when I started playing, they tried hammering classical music. Is that what you learned as well? Or?
Oh, of course. Of course. It used to be that classical music was the only way to go. And even, you know, when I was a student here, I transferred from Pasadena City College to Cal State LA in 1987. And the reason I didn't pursue a jazz degree was because in order to get a jazz degree in piano, you had to give a junior recital that was purely classical music.
Oh, crap.
So, and I was thinking at that time, okay, I'm going to spend the next year or so practicing like crazy all these classical pieces, and then just 1 year to become good at jazz? I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah.
Now, we don't do that anymore. But it used to be, you know, you had to play classical first, then you can play something else.
Wow.
So, but that has changed.
So, well, just for this school or just nationwide?
It used to be nationwide. I think Cal State LA was a little bit behind the times in 1987. Oh, yeah. Okay. But you go back to the 1950s, you couldn't even play in a jazz band in a school. You know, I mean, it was frowned upon.
Really?
Yeah.
And today, now jazz is the genre, right? I mean,
well, it's popular. Let's put it that way.
It's a much more highly respected form than it was when it was first born as well.
Right.
It was criticized by the classical community as like noise, a deviation from good music.
Oh, you know, there used to be a magazine. I forget the name, and I should remember, but I forgot the name. This magazine, it was like for all music lovers, and I remember seeing an old issue, probably from the 1930s or 40s, and the issue was all dedicated to the problem of jazz. The jazz was becoming a problem.
Oh, how so?
There was, first of all, it was attracting young musicians.
How dare they?
Yeah, who were not playing the classics anymore because they wanted to play. At that time, was swing, you know, swing music.
Swing.
I mean, and there were people like, I don't know if you know of a band leader, a conductor here, Sousa. He wrote all these marches. You know, like Stars and Stripes Forever.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That guy. And he was like, oh, it's like the worst thing that ever happened. You know, it's a...
I don't know. He was very famous for those power chords, though, right? I mean...
Well, for composing these marches that we hear all the time, you know, like Stars and Stripes Forever,
yeah.
El Capitan, and mm-hmm. things like that. When you hear them, you go, oh, yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah.
You know, because all the military bands play them.
Exactly.
You know? And he was like, you know, oh, jazz is the worst thing that can happen. You know, it's corrupting our youth and blah, 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 blah.
Well, I find that that's a very interesting outlook considering the experience that I've had in local music in Los Angeles and Long Beach. In that community, jazz has become sort of like the place to get to. Mm-hmm. My friends end up pulling me aside to tell me how excited they are that they've begun practicing their jazz standards now,
right.
And they're going through their chord progressions, getting the 2-5-1 down now, and that's what they consider to be, you know, them finally going to the high level of music after so long just playing what they hear and playing what they know.
And to think that back then, it was like considered right. very, very bad. Wow.
Now we also have to recognize that probably what John Philip Sousa was thinking about was not what today we think of jazz. You know, because there was good jazz in the 1920s and 30s, and there was Duke Ellington, for instance. And there was also popular music that they also called jazz that was not that great, you know?
It was crappy.
So, right? You know, there was a wide... Because at that time, and I think this is important to point out, in those years, jazz was popular music.
Yes.
Mm.
Okay, so as in all popular music...
Well, there were all those jazz clubs, right? I mean,
yeah, but I mean, it was popular in the sense that that's what kids wanted to listen to and play. Mm. So there was good jazz and bad jazz. The same way today you turn on the radio, you know, there's good pop and there's bad pop.
Wow.
Right? And that, yeah. Of course, would play into people's opinions of what jazz is.
Right.
If you're hearing it all day, every day on the radio, and it's not necessarily... Well, not everyone is Coltrane and Miles Davis.
Right.
Some of it.
Really, and at that time, would be not everyone was, you know, Fletcher Henderson. Not everyone was Duke Ellington.
Right.
Yeah.
Or Count Basie. You know, there were some bands that were like, you know, not very interesting. So they would hear that and go, okay, that's not good.
You know, I know this is kind of aside from what I originally wanted to talk about, but what is like the history of jazz essentially? Not that I don't know. I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, it's African American music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's not forget that, because, you know,
people forget.
People forget. Yeah. And it comes from the experience of the African American here in the United States. And, the legacy that they had before, the blues and you know, all that type of music, even ragtime, you know. So there's a moment in the musical history of the United States where, you know, out of the area of New Orleans, you know, with Louis Armstrong, that a new style of music not only is in New Orleans anymore, but expands all over the United States. And that's really the origins of jazz. You know, maybe people say that Louis Armstrong was the first jazz musician, because he really took what was sort of like a ragtime style of music that had improvisation and had, but he made it a soloist music. Louis Armstrong was the first jazz soloist that became a star.
Yeah, because there would be bands like in Harlem, right? And stuff like that.
No, that comes later. It comes from New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So then it goes to New York. And then it goes to Chicago. And then it goes to Kansas City. And then, you know, all over the United States.
Okay.
So it's African American music.
All right. That's interesting. I mean, I knew that, but I mean, I didn't know that it originally started in New Orleans.
In that region, only the city, but that region is where
the whole region.
Something special happens.
Yes, I would say that the first root of jazz music would be the slave spiritual.
Yeah.
And then over time, after slaves are freed, you get the ragtime. Ragtime evolves into your more rootsy forms of blues. Then you get more of like a stage blues right before jazz starts to bloom in proper.
Right. And let's not forget that New Orleans is a Caribbean city.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you have the Caribbean influence.
Mm-hmm.
Jelly Roll Morton, who was a pianist older than Louis Armstrong, but a pianist who claimed himself to have invented jazz, he talks a lot about the Latin tinge. And he, you know, there's recordings at the Smithsonian where he's describing, you know, the rhythms that they used to play. And one of them, and very prominent in his music, is the habanera rhythm that came from Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's that Caribbean element in jazz that a lot of books don't mention. But if you listen to early jazz, you know, you can hear it.
You know, when I took your class years ago, I mean, what I enjoyed about your class was that you explained the history and what was going on in the society. Obviously, that was a class topic, right? So, but I mean, you explained it very well, where you see the political, the economic, and the social changes and influences. They just spread all over, right? I mean, they just keep on inspiring and inspiring and inspiring. I mean, trying to say, like, so jazz came originally from I'm guessing slaves, right? But they were inspired by Caribbean music, and then Caribbean music was inspired by Haitian, right? I mean,
well, I wouldn't say inspired, because in most, you know, what we call folk musics or traditional musics or root music, it's not like you listen to something and you go, oh, I want to do that, and I want to use that.
Yeah.
It's sort of natural. It happens. You know? And the way the Caribbean influenced jazz is because New Orleans is in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And back then, it's not like today, you know, where you can take a plane and... No, there was a shipping route. You know, that basically united all the major ports of the Caribbean and then South America. So you would have sailors traveling from New Orleans to Havana, to Veracruz, Mexico, and then back to New Orleans. And what do sailors do when they go to the ports? They go have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to places where, you know, what today we call roots music is played. You know, and many of those sailors were also amateur musicians, because before we had iPads and all that, people didn't take music with them. They took guitars, they took accordions, yeah, they took banjos, you know, whatever was easily transported, and they would go and play music and make music. And they would go, if you're from New Orleans and you go to Cuba and you meet up at a bar with some other musicians, you learn. Mm. You go, okay, I can do this. And then you go back home and you learn something new, and without you even noticing, it appears in your music. Hmm. So there was this cultural exchange that was going on. And we're talking here about working class people.
Yeah.
No, this was not universities. It wasn't educated people with degrees, you know, and I'm doing the air quotation mark. It was working people. So it really happened in a very natural way, you know, this communication. We forget that it also went the other way, that jazz influenced Cuban music. And I have a very good friend, a musicologist in Cuba called Olavo Aleng. And Olavo Aleng, he always tells me that the influence why trumpet became so important in Cuba was not because of military bands, was not because of Europe. It was because of Louis Armstrong.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Louis Armstrong was so influential all over the world. We forget,
right,
how important Louis Armstrong was. He was like Michael Jackson.
Yes, it really seems that the jazz programs from the schools in L.A. County, they don't play enough Louis Armstrong.
They play a lot of Miles Davis.
There's a great devotion to Davis. There's a great devotion to Duke Ellington.
Mm. Right.
But they don't seem to recognize Louis Armstrong as the place where it all began.
Oh, yeah.
And I imagine it must have caused so much distress and, like, chaos, or not chaos, but, you know, a lot of harm once, you know, Fidel Castro kind of took away those instruments, right?
No, that didn't happen.
I thought they did.
No.
Didn't they ban it, playing music?
No.
What? I just watched that movie.
What movie is that?
It was Che.
They didn't ban music. If anything,
like, it was like, apparently, like, well, obviously this is a movie, so I could be, you know, bullshitting completely. You know, most of my education comes from movies. So, but from what I understand, like, there was an order, perhaps for a small period of time, that you couldn't play instruments out, particularly American music or American influenced music. Yeah.
Okay, let's clarify some things.
Yeah, please.
Here. Okay. So, yes, there was a decree in Cuba stating that you should not listen to the music of the imperialists.
Mm.
And in that case, they were referring to the United States. On the other hand, if you didn't call it jazz, you could play anything you wanted.
Oh.
And what happened was there was this orchestra, Orquesta Cubana de Música Moderna, Cuban Orchestra of Modern Music. And guess what they played? Jazz. And but they were financed by the state, by the government. But they didn't call it jazz. They called it modern music. And out of that orchestra came the people that, you know, later left Cuba, and they're famous here, like Arturo Sandoval, Paquito de Rivera, people who stayed in Cuba and became superstars, such as Chucho Valdés, and the other players who stayed with him and formed a group called Iraquere.
Oh, love Iraquere.
Yeah. So, things are not as simple as movies usually want us to believe.
Well, it was really intense. A lot of people were killed in that movie. But yeah, I get you. Yeah, there's a there's a pattern of multiple societies that do something similar to that, right? I mean, particularly in Latin America, where, you know, music becomes a revolution, kind of, or a way of...
Or music becomes the sound, the soundtrack of revolution. Okay? And having lived in Latin America for a good part of my life, I've lived now more years in the United States than I did in Peru, but I can tell you that in many ways, Latin America is a much more musical culture. And it comes from a tradition of the guitar. Guitars are not easy instruments, but they're easy to transport. Mm-hmm. And since, you know, with the Spanish influence and the Portuguese influence, guitars became very important in Latin America, much more than in the United States. So it was very common, even, you know, I remember in my childhood that at family parties, you know, they didn't turn on the radio or the record player, but people would bring out their guitars. Mm-hmm. And they were darn good guitar players. And the musical entertainment was provided by the family. Mm-hmm. So when you have big social movements in Latin America, you will find that a lot of the people participating, either it's, you know, revolutions or protests, people who participate, they know how to play the guitar. So, of course, music becomes part of it. Even back in let's go back to Cuba, the Cuban Revolution. There are all these wonderful photos of the barbudos, you know, the people that went and fought alongside Fidel. Oh, yeah. And besides carrying their rifles, they got their instruments. You know, they have their guitars. There's even a great photo of a guy who had a rifle and a clarinet. Oh. Took his clarinet to battle because, you know, when they're not fighting, you want to entertain. You know, you want to write songs. And so in Latin America, you have a lot of music that was created during these political times. Hmm. Okay, sort of like what we had here with Woody Guthrie. Hmm. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Woody Guthrie. Woody Guthrie was, I guess some people would call him like a folk musician. And he was a composer. He wrote songs. But most importantly, he was always writing about the injustices, about the labor movement. So Woody Guthrie wrote a song that all of us know, This Land Is Your Land.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Which is completely misunderstood. You know, they think it's a patriotic song. And it's not. Woody Guthrie was an anarchist. Wow. And when he says, this land is your land, this land is my land, he's really saying this really literally belongs to all of us. Not to Rockefeller.
Yeah.
Not to Donald Trump.
Or the federal government.
In it fact, belongs to all of us.
The story that when they invited him to play for Obama's inauguration, he only did so under the premise that he could play a hidden verse that he had written that specifically and almost very literally calls out things like private property.
No way.
Yeah. And says, like, hey...
Are you sure it was Woody Guthrie? I think he was dead.
Yeah, I think he would be dead.
Well, there was it was someone that they brought
or,
in.
Or would it be Pete Seeger?
Pete Seeger. That's the one.
Right.
But he was playing the Woody Guthrie song.
So in many ways, Pete Seeger is the continuation of Woody Guthrie. Mm. Because not only did he sing those songs, but also Pete Seeger was a person, you would call him a left winger, you know, a socialist. Who didn't believe that the land, you know, should be monopolized. You know, that, you know, it really belongs to all of us.
Yeah.
Now, you made an interesting comment with the federal government. The federal government doesn't really own land. The federal government manages land.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They lease it out to farmers, to right. people who go hiking.
So... You know, like what's happening in
Oregon.
Oregon with, mm-hmm. with whatever they're called.
The militia, quote unquote.
Right, yeah, the militia. They are protesting the control of the federal... One of the things they're protesting is the control of the federal government over lands, which they are not saying really belongs to all of us. They're saying they want to use it for their purposes.
Yes. Mm.
Well, didn't the same thing happen in, I think, I want to say Arizona or Nevada with the Bundy Ranch? Where they wanted they wanted to use public land to feed their cows. But the thing is, the way that works, you have to buy permits in order to feed, you know, just be grazing. Otherwise, you're just profiting off a land that is, quote unquote, the people's land.
Yes.
Right.
And so, yeah, that didn't make any sense. He had like a whole... He had like snipers on rooftops and stuff. It was ridiculous.
And I was actually watching something about that a few days ago, and the guy was like such a racist.
Oh yeah, I think he had some alliance or something related with the KKK or something like that.
I saw a little clip of him saying, you know, I don't know if you know black people were better off as slaves than they are under Obamacare or whatever. Wow. And that's when Fox News sort of like went, sorry.
Yeah,
we better stay away. Stay away from this guy. He's a little nut.
It's crazy. Some people actually believe that.
Yeah.
I mean,
they have this idea of slavery as being as portrayed in some movies. You know?
Like
the Happy
movies?
Plantation.
Zippity doodah.
Yeah. You know, like everything was beautiful. We were taking care of these. They're like children. No.
I used to go to a school in Ohio, and there was a guy from Alabama who went there to become a priest. He was studying theology. And we got into an argument, and he straight up told me, you know, slaves had it way better. They had free dental. They had free
dental.
Healthcare. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Dental? I mean, the only dental they would get is when their teeth got knocked out by the slave owners.
See?
You know?
Like, aren't they happy?
Right.
It's so ridiculous.
You know, I always tell my students, you know, because there's a part in one of the courses, the one you took,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know if I did it when you took the course, but I talk a lot about the music that was created because we brought slaves to the Americas, you know, and the Western African slaves that were brought in, they brought their music and their culture and all that. But I also, you know, explain a little bit what slavery was about because I think a lot of people don't know. And I always mention that they should watch a TV show. And I'm sure you've seen it, Roots.
Oh, yeah.
Which is powerful.
Oh, yeah.
That's a powerful,
it's still powerful.
Show. Yes.
It came out when? In like early 90s?
No, it's earlier than that. That it had
80s?
70s or 80s.
Really?
I think 70s.
Mm. Wow, it's that old.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't know.
And it's a powerful show, but it, you know, it shows scenes of how the slaves were captured, you know, the sale of the slaves when they arrive, And people forget, you know, because they
also include the torture.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Man.
The torture and the killings and all that. We cannot forget, you know, because now they're whitewashing what slavery was.
Yeah. And in fact, they're whitewashing it so much that in some Texas textbooks, they're not even calling them slaves anymore.
Yeah, I forget. I read about that.
They have some weird type of servant that they were calling them.
Yeah.
Like a black servant?
Right.
No, they use some term that sort of like...
Really softens the blow.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of lame shit is that?
I'm telling you, man, but education is really in danger in America
right now. But it's Texas.
If those sort of things are possible.
It's Texas.
But not only... Mm-hmm. But Texas is like a big state with a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, a lot of dumb people that don't know what a slave is. Like, that's crazy.
They have a major influence on American politics as a whole.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we might get a, what's his name, Cruz.
Right.
Yeah. And that's a scary, if I think that Donald Trump is bad, I think Cruz is dangerous.
Yeah, I would agree.
Right.
I mean.
You definitely don't need any, for lack of a better word, sellouts standing up to speak for anybody, man, because they'll say the wrong thing for us all.
You know, the crazy thing is, I really think they believe what they're saying.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
You know?
Like, that's why he's their guy.
Yeah.
They don't take them until they're sure that they got the one who really believes it.
It's like, what's your IQ test? What's your face look like? Oh, yeah. This guy's dumb enough.
All right. He's the one.
I really don't think they're dumb.
You know? I think
Donald Trump is very smart.
No, they absolutely know what they're
doing. I think
Donald
Trump is smart. I disagree with him entirely, and I think I think he's bad for this country overall, but I think he knows what he's doing.
Yes. And I think he's smart because he also knows how to manipulate people.
Agreed.
He's saying the things that those crazies want to hear.
Yes. Yeah. And he's saying the things that we don't want to hear.
Right.
I feel like there's always that opposite end reaction where he's mobilizing liberals in a way that wouldn't be mobilized before.
I feel like Donald Trump is the definition of capitalism in politics, right?
Right.
I mean, he has enough money. He's not influenced by anything. Mm-hmm. He himself is the influence. He's being real, honest. And that's the thing. Like, I think he's completely honest. I think he's, you know, crazy, but he's being honest. And that's the scariest thing. Like, up until now, it was all, you know, liars, you know, people who were bought. Right. But now it's, whoa, this is the definition of greed.
And some people, they want to hear that. They want a Donald Trump. They want a Ted Cruz. Because they're saying the craziest stuff that they're thinking. Mm. You know, someone told me the other day, like, well, people follow him because they're honest. He's honest. I said, no, people follow him because he's saying the stuff that, you know,
that they honestly believe.
Yeah.
That's why they feel that he's so honest.
Right.
They start hearing their thoughts come out of someone else's mouth. That sounds like honesty to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the thing that troubles me the most about Trump. It's not so much Trump. I don't believe that he could actually be elected. It's the fact that other people have come out to support him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When I drive down the freeway, I work in my car as a delivery driver right now for the day job. And I'm only seeing two types of bumper stickers, and they're polarized. It's Trump and Bernie.
Yes.
I do not see people supporting anyone else in the middle. The support is for extremes these days.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the other extreme, because I don't believe Bernie Sanders is an extremist.
Oh, really?
I personally don't believe he's an extremist.
What do you identify him as?
Okay, so... he is a democratic socialist.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what he says.
Right. And he's been saying this for years and years and years. I knew of Bernie Sanders. He was mayor of a little town in wherever he's from, Vermont or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And the reason I knew about him is because during the Central American crisis, which both of you are too young to remember, you know, there were revolutions, and the United States was paying basically mercenary armies to fight these left-wing guerrillas. And Bernie Sanders was opposed to all this, these illegal interventions in Central America. So I've been aware of Bernie Sanders for decades. And first of all, he's not a communist.
No.
Which would be the extreme, you know, according to American political values, that would be extreme. He claims to be a democratic socialist who basically is telling us that we can do the same thing that the Scandinavian countries do, which is to have a wide and effective social network to protect those who are not privileged. So he's for universal health care. He's for universal education. So what is extreme about that?
I guess they're extreme from the American perspective. I don't personally believe that they're extreme either. Those things seem kind of necessary, almost like a given. But they're extreme in the sense that I feel that much of America is afraid of the word socialist.
Yeah.
They automatically connect it to communist when they hear that word. And when you hear words like universal come out of the government, those sorts of things sound extreme to Americans too. When I was in college from 2006 to 2011, and during that time, I was frequently bringing up socialist arguments. I was trying to say that the government needed to pay for our food, even. I was going very far and saying that they owed us a lot. And the rebuttal was always, where do you get the money? Where do you get the money? And we spend horrendous amounts on the military right now, and we don't have to. And I feel that if we didn't, we
not, not only do we spend money in the military, we spend money in wars.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Every bomb that is dropped.
Continuous war.
It's not $100. It's not $1,000. These bombs that they drop are thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yes.
Oh. Okay. Millions.
Right. So, no, I mean, each individual bomb is like, you know, I don't know the exact figure, but it won't be $1,000. You cannot make a bomb for $1,000. We're talking about, you know, just, and they bomb indiscriminately, and they send, you know, these, all the military operations in these wars cost amounts of money. They would take care of health care.
Yes.
They would take care of offering a free university for all those who are qualified. Now, you do know that the Cal State system used to be free.
Yes. I wasn't alive then.
Yeah, you weren't.
I also know that the UC system used to be more open.
Right.
Yeah. That it was that you could actually go.
So it's not that Bernie Sanders is extreme. It's that the whole country has moved to the right.
Yes.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Okay, because if you're arguing against free education, then you're really arguing to what the United against what the United States was in the 1950s.
Hmm.
Where California had free state tuition.
Right? When we were trying to do combat with socialism and communism, that's when we developed those social programs.
Right.
Yeah.
That was our way of beating them. And now it's not important to us at all.
Right.
Well, I mean, now we have, like, you know, Coca-Cola CEOs or executives being on, you know, some of the board of educations in certain schools that I won't name, you know,
like, right.
Oh yeah, man.
But it, I mean, why? Because so that they can put their Pepsi, you know, machine, Coca-Cola machine, or, you know, oh, you have your sweater. Oh, it says Coca-Cola on the side, you know, it's branding. And now they can tell you what to teach, you know,
they haven't yet tried that with me.
Oh, well.
Because the day they do is the day they're going to find out who really they're talking to.
All right.
I will not follow the corporate
agenda
model. I will not. And that's why I get to teach that class that you took.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not scared to talk about Cuba and what happened in Chile in 1972. And I'm not.
Well, I mean, also, It's essential for people to know this kind of stuff, like how slavery, you know, changed all of the Americas, all of the culture, how religion was changed, you know, from, you know, slaves coming over here, how music was changed, how just where people's beliefs and cultures, I mean, that all influences to us today.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would go so far as to say that most of the population of the Americas, they're descendants of some form of diaspora. It's why people come here. Refugees from all over the world came to America, leaving violence and discrimination in the countries that they were coming from. And the thing that's become very disappointing about America is they come here to meet more now. It's no longer that place of all inclusiveness.
Mm-hmm.
From my experience, America is a place of very segregated integration.
Right.
Hmm. Where we integrate at the public schools, but we segregate economically, where large portions of the community will be owned by one race as far as what shops are on that corner, you know, or what shops are even in that part of town.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's gentrification. You know, like we were on the way over here, we were talking about you know, how we want to move and, you know, live. I want to live closer to downtown because I work and most of my day is always in around downtown in those areas. And I was telling him, you know, NPR just came out with a statistic. You have to have at least 100,000 in order to afford living in the heart of downtown Los Angeles.
Wow.
Like it's ridiculous. And just about 10 years ago, that was not the case at all.
Right.
You know, and we were talking about how, you know, when you really look at it, what you were mentioning, there's not that many black communities in Los Angeles.
No.
Like there used to be. Inglewood used to be, you know, have a strong black community. Compton
Absolutely.
Used to have a strong black community. Watts used to have a strong black community. And I was telling him, you know, most of them are moving east to Inland Empire.
Mm-hmm. From my experience, a lot of the black students that I went to the university with aren't even staying in California. They
Wow.
move down south or east coast. They're not here. I was trying to move earlier, 2015. Mm-hmm. I have a wife and a 2-year-old son. He turned 2 back in November. And we were trying to move away from our parents' place, essentially. And we were looking into Leimert Park, Inglewood, that sort of area.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very expensive. We couldn't afford to move where the black people were living.
Okay. No, Leimert Park is now pretty upscale.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was such a crazy experience to think that the one place that we found black people living in community where they had black-owned shops, black people meeting in the park on weekends to do the normal things that people do in a community on the weekend, but it's staggeringly a majority black people. When you finally find that community, you can't afford to live there.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was very disappointing. And we ended up living in Orange County on the other end with a Mexican family who had a room that they needed taken care of because they're having trouble paying for where they're at.
See, that's one of the side effects of this, you know?
Yes.
But, I mean, that's a different topic, obviously.
Oh, of course. But to bring it all together, music as a tool and, what would you say, a byproduct of revolution, I would say that that's part of the lifestyle I'm living. I feel the power of music. I grew up listening to Michael Jackson, Marvin Gaye, John Lennon from the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
Men who had the courage to speak about things that were happening in the world, and some would even say that they paid the price for it. And I would say that music is in danger itself because of the mainstream perception of music. And I would ask you, Dr. DeCastro, what is the relevance of social issues in music today? And do you think that that those things are still relevant for people here in America?
Well, when I don't listen to pop music a lot anymore.
What? You don't listen to the Bieber?
No. I try not to listen to Justin Bieber. Yeah. When I happen to listen because I'm in someone else's car or at a party, what do they sing about?
That's a good question. And I actually wanted to ask you that myself because when we talked about you had a segment in your class about Brazil and how just before the revolution that happened in Brazil, there was a time.
Well, there was not a revolution. There was a military coup.
Oh, military coup. I'm sorry.
The opposite.
Yeah.
Of the revolution.
Well, I mean, there was a type of music that, you know, Brazil globally is known for, but that didn't represent Brazil at the time.
Well, so we're talking about bossa nova.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so bossa nova is, and I love bossa nova. I don't want to, you know, say bad things about bossa nova because it's well crafted. The lyrics are beautiful, but it does not address reality. And when the military coup happened in Brazil, many musicians and many college students and workers, we said, well, you know, bossa nova is not about anything we can relate to. Because bossa nova was created by an upper middle class in Rio de Janeiro, and the topics were about beautiful girls and the sunset and my little
Woman
boat. And
of Ipanema, right?
The Girl from Ipanema, which is a beautiful song. But when you have a military tank outside of your university, making sure that you guys don't cause trouble, Do you go home and listen to The Girl from Ipanema, or you want to hear songs that tell you about what's going on?
See, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about, is that today, and I have thought about, you know, inviting you on this podcast for a while, but when I first thought about it, when you first talked about that topic, the first thing that came into my head was the hit song Happy. And mm-hmm. today, I wonder if today that's kind of where we are. You know, we have all this happy
music.
Are
you happy?
Am I happy? No, I'm not really happy.
I'm not happy.
No, there's a lot of unhappy things happening.
I would even go so far as to say that that one song is an anomaly as far as subject matter. Most of the music I hear today is very sad. It's about lack. The women are singing about wanting a man, or they're finally getting rid of him. And the men are singing about how they don't need a woman, how they'll mess with any other dude who tries to cross them. And then I've noticed this other trend that's just come up in late 2015, early 2016. There's this new trend of judgmental lyrics coming from the pop scene. I'm hearing songs that are saying, oh, what am I doing here? I don't want to talk to the person over there vomiting. Yeah. I don't want to talk to them over there because all they do is gossip. And it's like, wow, so you're literally making fun of the people you're singing your songs to. They're at the party listening to your music, right. And you're talking about how you're too good for the party.
So I guess our question is there a military coup going to happen in the next 5 years?
I sure hope so. And I don't think the American military, the USA military, would even want to.
Okay.
Okay. I really don't think it's in the DNA of the US military. Now, impossible? Nothing is impossible. I don't think it's going to happen. What I think would be more dangerous is that we democratically elect people who are really fascists. Mm. That fascism suddenly becomes acceptable. They won't call it that. We sort of have a style of fascism, because one of the basic ideas of fascism was that the industrialists should run the country. Mussolini got rid of any democratic process and basically called the industrialists in and said, you guys make the decisions. I'm here for you. I'm for what today would we call CEOs, mm-hmm. right? So we're more than willing sometimes to admire these people and think that they know better. Donald Trump is sort of, he's a CEO of Trump, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are looking at him and going, well, you know, he knows how to make money. He can run the country. I will trust that he will decide the best things for me. Even though many of the things they propose, they're not good for us. They're going to get rid of the little bit of social health care that we have in this country and replace it with what? What are they proposing?
Death?
How would that? Yeah,
right. I mean, just die.
Build a wall. They
want to build a wall.
So what I'm really scared is that we will eventually, as a nation, vote and put someone like that in the White House.
Mm.
I don't even think that it's necessary to go that far. I've already see enough signs in today's government that are troubling for free citizens, such as how any interaction with the police is one where they either got you or you got away.
Right.
There's no, like, peaceful interaction with the police. You're either getting a ticket, getting cited, getting arrested, mm-hmm. or they're letting you off. They're letting you go.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we're already living in a state where the police are running things. There's a line from The Wire, the old TV show on HBO.
Yeah, it used to be a great show. Yeah.
Right? There's a line from the character McNulty. He says there's only one dictatorship in the entire world, and that's a cop on his beat.
Mm.
Because they get away with everything they want.
Right.
They literally make the decision right there what's going to happen, and they go home at the end of the day still paid for every decision they make, even when someone's life is lost.
Yeah. See, but it's also important to recognize that, you know, it's freaking hard to be a cop, especially in a place like Los Angeles, where every day you just see the worst part of people doing the worst things. And then you come home and you have a kid and you have a wife that have no idea or can't even relate to what you just saw.
Yep, it's definitely difficult. But I can't really have any mercy on
really
them
do it.
Because I've seen plenty of videos from other countries where the police are able to mm-hmm. apprehend armed subjects mm-hmm. without being armed themselves.
Yes,
it's definitely
that
history,
is true.
Right?
That is true.
It's all about the way we do it. Mm-hmm. America needs to change its policing. And the music is not necessarily concerned with talking about these sort of issues at all.
Yeah,
but
why is
tell
that?
Me. Oh. I have a question for you guys.
Okay.
You're much younger than I am.
What?
Oh, wow. What a notion.
But tell me, why is popular music, at least the one that you listen to, that, you know, the radio, and you know, the what's that, Katy Perry,
yes,
or whatever her name is, why
fireworks,
why
know.
Don't they
I think that's her, I don't know,
deal with important topics?
Well, that was my question to you.
Well, I have my opinion.
All right, you go
I
ahead.
Do have an opinion on this. I think that it could be chalked up to two things. First and foremost, we live in an escapist culture. Think about all the issues that there are out there right now. You've got global warming, police brutality, crony capitalism, healthcare, education in shambles, artisan shambles in general. So with the world in the state that it's in, it's easier to not think about it. People don't want to hear those things. When I start those conversations in groups of people, I'm often met with resistance where it's like, hey, I'm just trying to have a good time. So there's escapism from the people themselves. Then there's this other element where music has been industrialized. So you have industrialists, CEOs, who control things at the top, and they need things to run smoothly at the bottom. They need it to be on an assembly line. And it's easier to stamp out simple songs about love, simple songs about nothing, really, than it is to make music of substance where you need an entire band to play it and you need someone who's a serious lyricist to make the lyrics make sense and still be musical. Those things are no longer necessary. Just write three hooks.
Well, what's crazy about it is that some of the previous like songwriters from like back in the 70s and 60s, they still write
absolutely
some of those songs.
They haven't gone anywhere. Just and, like the same politicians
yeah, no one,
from back
no
in the
one
day
listens to
are still running for
anymore.
Office today.
Huh?
It's the same thing with the politicians. You know, everyone on Supreme Court is over 60, 70. We let the leaders do the same thing until they die. That's one of the problems with the world, I feel. We're not letting young people take over music. Because young people like me, I feel the people my age who are making music, they're very concerned with social topics and they're putting those
yeah.
things into their music. But we don't run the industry. We're trying to break into it. And we do that by giving them more of what they've heard.
And also, isn't like Clear Channel owning every radio station in the nation?
Yes.
And how do you get them to play music that's not, you know, like the one we're criticizing right now?
You have to show them that you'll make money or you'll bring
right.
in money. And that's the real thing. And, you know, it's the money. Everybody wants like to make sure, oh, you don't want to offend that group. You don't want to offend this group. You don't want to say anything too, you know, risque, you know,
right.
just go out there and make some money.
That's a great point. No one wants to be offensive either.
Yeah.
So the thing about political music is it's offensive from the very start. Someone's going to hear it and disagree.
Right.
What I do like, though, is that there's a lot of, especially in this millennials, I feel, because you kind of have a split where you have early millennials that that kind of still remember using an encyclopedia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
And those people kind of do remember, you know, starting their own thing and trying to build something out of Legos, you know, literally making something on their own. And today I see a lot of them making their own music production, making
mm-hmm.
their own, you know, startup company online or whatever. And then you have like a back end millennials that all they know is online touchscreen and, you know, they it's already done for them. And what's sad to say is that, especially in the United States, that's all they know is the surface level. They don't even know the coding behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just know, oh, it's pretty. Oh, it's that. Oh, it's, you know, Katy Perry. Oh, it's Justin Bieber. Like, oh, it's just, you know, good. It's just always good and happy.
I was having a conversation just the other night with some guys, and we were reminiscing on how we used to code our own websites back in middle school.
HTML, and, Cascade.
These two guys I was talking to specifically, they work in the tech industry now, and even with their know-how, they still don't bother to make their own websites. They use Tumblr to host their professional stuff because there's really no merit in making it on your own anymore. It's definitely more economical to just have someone else do your website.
Same thing in music.
Oh, yes.
I mean, why do you need to learn to play an instrument if you can just, you know, get a computer program that already has the sounds, has loops, has beats, and you just manipulate those things?
See, and I appreciate true DJs that make their own sound, and you know they develop that kind of music, and I really enjoy instrumental, like John Luther Adams.
You lost me there. I have no idea who this is.
Well, he's a composer. He usually makes like long sounds, and he's inspired by nature. Okay. He's also a prolific atheist, but
what is a prolific atheist?
Pretty much a very quiet atheist.
I like how you put the two words together. I know. Prolific atheist. I'm like, how does that work?
Well, he's a composer, he's inspired by sounds, by nature itself. So when he composes, he tries to make like the piano and strings very similar to like the sounds of like birds chirping. Right. His most recent album was Ocean, which was very good. And I think I don't know because I'm just bullcrapping right here, but I think it's the intro to The Revenant. But
oh wow,
yeah. But he's he would be somebody that they choose for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy those kind of people that are inspired and they try to make sound manipulate reality in some way, and in some way DJs that create their own sound kind of do that themselves. What I don't appreciate is when I listen to music where I'm like, you know what, that's stolen from somewhere. Yep. and I bring it up and the person next to me is like, but it sounds great, right? Like, yeah. You know, they're, but, you know, their eyelashes curl up, their eyes, you know, right, but
you have to,
like,
you
oh
have to
God,
understand you have to understand that really then it is successful.
Yes.
That's
right.
Music is really, or all art in general, is about some level of imitation, because it was the art that we experienced that made us go out and create it in the first place. The thing that upsets me isn't when I hear a song that sounds stolen, because, you know, one of the good parts of music is stealing creatively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to steal a little bit, but you want to do it the right way. What I dislike in music is when it sounds pointless and noisy.
Right.
There's a lot of electronic music where it's just like, whip, 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 whip,
yeah.
whip, whip, whip. And I'm like, all right, please stop. and it's definitely comparable to the earlier point we were making about jazz, where today there's so much electronic music that there's no way it's going to all be good. You definitely got to dig for the guys who are serious composers, and they've just moved to the new medium.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely most of the guys out there are just mashing on the keyboard, man.
Well, what's even worse is that, and I imagine you don't follow electronic music very often.
Not a lot. It's not my thing. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just not my thing.
Yeah. Well, there used to be a time when I would go, you know, I'm not saying that I used to be a big partier, but I used to go to a lot of raves and I would go to a lot of underground raves and watching, you know, the DJs very intent and focused on what they're doing. And then I go to a massive rave. I used to go to this rave called EDC, and I had started going since like 2008 here in Los Angeles, and then I moved to Las Vegas. And when I went to Vegas one time, I saw the DJ just come out from behind and just go out in front and start clapping, you know, hyping up the crowd. And the bass drops, which is a key element in electronic music.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling me that this guy didn't do anything up there. So you didn't do anything. Like, what did I pay to come over here to play my iPod?
But he did it previously. So he programmed it.
Well,
right?
Here's the thing.
I assume.
Is that, assuming, but realize that there has been a trend over the past 5 years where these original artists that usually, you know, they did make their own music have now, you know, they just, they're going, doing these large events, first of all, because that's unfortunately how most musicians have to make their money. Yep,
the album does not sell anymore.
Yeah. No. And, mm-hmm. and two, you know, he, obviously there's no more creativity. Like, it's just about, you know, playing whatever, whatever sounds okay, and there's no real thought or work behind it.
Nor is there any stage presence because they let the light show do most of it for them now.
Oh yeah, well right. Everybody's tripping, that's why.
And see, even you mentioned that, like, you wondered if it was programmed at some point, but DJing isn't even as complicated as programming it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like, once the computer is hooked up to the speakers, you just push play. Mm-hmm. It's not like it was programmed. It's just the way that playing any recording works.
Right.
You didn't... Do you call it programming when you guys record the song in the studio beforehand and then play it for someone later?
Yeah,
no. It's just pushing play. And that's what makes it so offensive. If they had programmed something, that might have been even more than what right. they do. Because then there's at least something different than what it does on the album.
Mm-hmm.
But really, with electronic music, the build and the drop is really all there is to it. So when you go live, that's all you have to do. And there's really no way to build drop on the machines the right way without it just already being recorded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, a lot, a little insider note, a lot of those big build-ups and drops, they're pre-recorded before they even go into the music. You can download big packs of build-ups and big packs of drops and just find the one that works best for your song. So the only thing that people end up really writing is a simple drum pattern, a simple chord progression, and a little bit of melody.
Right.
And then they throw in the drop that makes it go... And then... Then right back into the melody again.
That's I heard that song.
Right? Yeah.
It's one of my favorites.
Really. Well, I mean, do you find, like... I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, any of this music is offensive, but, I mean, do you find... sometimes music offensive?
Yes. Absolutely.
Very quick answer to you. Was,
well,
yes. Sometimes, you know, I'm in someone else's car and they're playing something and I go, please, you know, please turn that off. I can be offended for many reasons. One, that it might be
a bad day.
No. because music usually puts me in a good mood.
Okay.
But sometimes, you know, music can be just so simple to the point where it's stupid. When it's stupid, it is offensive. And I also, you know, don't like songs that put down women or, you know,
right.
sexist or racist, you know. And then there's music that is so full of anger, they just don't want to listen to it. You know, like there used to be a style of heavy metal, I don't even know the name, where people were screaming, basically.
Oh, yeah, that was a phase, yeah.
And I was like, oh, please, no. Turn that off. For me, that is not music. Technically, it is, because music is just manipulating sounds, right? Yeah. But for me, it's not. I don't want to listen to that. It's offensive.
Okay. So, what genre or, you know what, let's just be a little bit more specific. What artist would you, or quote-unquote artist, would you consider, you know, they're not delivering on good music?
Oh, my goodness. Because I don't listen to this stuff, mm-hmm. I really don't know the names. But I've heard a few Justin Bieber things.
Like the baby?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, what is that? Really?
I don't know.
And who is the audience for that? 12-year-old girl?
Yeah. Yeah, that yep, wear chastity exactly. rings.
And the reason why it's this popular is because they get them while they're young, and then they look back on it with affection.
Right. So let me ask you a question. If it's made for 12-year-old girls, why do I sometimes hear adults saying they like Justin Bieber?
Well, because people are stupid.
Like, it's all they have access
right?
to.
Yeah, people, I mean,
we were just talking about how the radio stations are owned by a few corporations, if not just one. So these are the guys who decide what people hear. And it's not like the radio is democratically chosen. If people chose what was on the radio, you might hear a little bit
right.
something else, right? But that's not the way it's going down. And I really feel that a lot of pop music might even sound better if they didn't just play it all the time. If
right.
that wasn't, if they didn't play the
yeah.
new song 10 times in a day, it might be more enjoyable than it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some of those songs that were like, man, this is a good song. And then you hear it 8 times that day. And you're just like, you know what, man? Screw this song. Like, yeah. This is stupid. Yeah. And so, it just takes out the joy you had from listening to, you know, it mm-hmm. might have been mediocre music or whatever, but it was still enjoyable. They took it away from me, Julian.
Right. You made such a great point when you said music is supposed to lighten up my mood when I listen to it. And I feel like a lot of the lyrics I hear on the radio, it's doing the opposite. The lyrics are literally bringing me down.
Right.
And I really don't have any patience for it at all. You mentioned that you would be in the car and you let someone know that you're offended. Have you ever had the experience that someone is offended that you're offended by their music?
Of course.
Oh, really?
Where do you think that comes from? I have that experience a lot, too.
They don't take into account you're a music professor and...
No, because because that in their eyes makes me a snob. You know, I know too much. You know, I'm self-important, blah, blah, blah. But I can tell you that people get offended when you tell them that what they like is not good.
That's true.
Okay? And I'll give you an example of something completely different. I'm vegan. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Meat eaters react, right?
Oh, yes. Just by saying you're vegan.
No.
Oh. First of all, they ask the stupid questions.
Well, one, you're not annoying. I gotta say that.
You know, right now,
you know what? We've been going for how long? Like over an hour, and you haven't brought it up until now.
Until
so
now, because I'm actually hungry, and I'm thinking, where will I go? but you know, they ask the stupid questions. You know, oh, and aren't you hungry all the time? Or what do you eat? And I usually react nice and say, what do you eat? And I go, well, come with me. I'll take you to a restaurant. Right. And we'll
there's lots of, especially
we'll
here.
Vegan, yeah. And I promise you, you'll love it. But
a cafe gratitude.
If you know, when people start getting aggressive, oh, I can't live without meat. And then you say, you know, meat's not really good for you. Then they get upset.
Ooh, right.
They get upset.
No one ever wants to hear anything negative about their habits.
Right. Yeah. So,
music is a habit.
You tell them, you know, that song you like really sucks. They get upset. I don't say it that way. You know, I try to be polite about things.
I've had people be offended by me just letting them know that I don't like it. It's like there's no democracy in music.
Right.
You're not allowed to not like what they like.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, another thing is, because you guys just reminded me of this. Have you heard of this new show? It's very similar to American Idol, but it's like, I think the Hispanic version or Latino version called La Banda.
No.
It is offensive.
I can imagine.
So basically this shows how commercialized music has become, because Ricky Martin is like the spearhead of it.
Okay.
So it's his comeback show. Okay. Right. Now imagine all these preteen kids that I don't know if they even reach puberty yet, but they are all together and they're competing to be part of this quote unquote band. And they're you know, they're all, you know, pretty boys, you know, gotta look nice, mm-hmm. you know. I don't know, like it's kinda weird, but these are kids that this show is making so much money off of these kids. And they're sending them, making them work hard, like actual professionals, you know, competing against each other, doing concerts, doing shows, practicing, rehearsals, and they don't get anything out of it except for the potential of getting a contract, which I'm pretty sure, as you know, doesn't mean you're going to get paid.
No, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. So, but I mean, in the process, you're talking about at least 6 to 8 weeks of just millions of dollars coming into this show. And this kid, he doesn't know it, but they're being used. And I have to admit, because, when I saw this show, my mom watches this show, all right, and she loves it. She loves Ricky Martin. She loves, you know, all the things that happen. And the moment I saw him, like, this is disgusting. Mm-hmm. Like, this is offensive to music and just the creation of music.
But Ricky Martin is offensive to music.
Oh,
wow.
I'm very
someone
interested
had
to
say
this.
It.
Hold on.
Someone
because
has
he's gay.
To say that. No. I have nothing against, you know, gay people or whatever, you know.
Tattooed gay.
Ricky Martin is the ultimate product.
Oh yeah.
Of what we were talking about, this yes. industry of, you know, Ricky Martin started with a group called Menudo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Menudo was a fabrication
mm-hmm.
by a producer.
Yes.
Get some kids, make them sing, they look good, the teenage girls go crazy, they get too old, we replace them.
Yeah.
So he grew up in that. That's his life. He understands what it is to be a product, right. not an artist.
And now
a
he's
product.
Bringing it back.
Oh, that is so chilly.
Yes. But you're really learning by watching that show. It's a really something that you're learning about the entire music industry, where they get these artists and they promise them exposure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's all the payment that they get. Is, oh, well, this is going to look good for you.
Right.
But what does that really mean?
And the weirdest thing is, like, that means so much to, like, a hungry artist.
Yes.
You know?
They want exposure. But I've learned after 6 years of being an independent artist in Los Angeles, you learn to ask for the money, not for the exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start asking for the money, that's when your career will really start to take off and you'll get the exposure that you want. Is once you start demanding, I want $200 if I'm going to show up and do
right.
30 minutes worth of work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I still get phone calls. Oh, yeah, this will be a great opportunity for you. You know, there's going to be a lot of important people in the audience. And they go, you know, I'm too old to fall for that trick.
Right.
I mean, that's the oldest trick in the book to get free music.
Yes. One thing I even noticed, has anyone who won American Idol even been famous?
There's been a few, but it fades.
I think like the first three winners
Kelly
actually
Clarkson,
famous.
Isn't she?
Yes.
I don't know. I never watched those shows.
Right?
I know there's Kelly Clarkson. There was Fantasia.
Yes.
There was a guy who...
Ruben. Big Ruben.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Ruben. But what happened to him?
None of these guys
heard.
Are actually...
what
happened?
Yeah, I've never heard
famous.
Of
us. And especially since those first four, not a single one of them has been anything memorable.
But also, you know, now people just expect, you know, a new American Idol winner. So it's not unique. You know, sort of like, oh, yeah, like, you know, every
right.
year
well,
it's going to happen.
Well, they canceled it now, right? They canceled
yes,
it.
No, this
canceled?
Is the last season.
Oh,
the season that's on right now is supposed to be the last season of American Idol.
See, I don't even know.
But my big disagreement with American Idol and all those types of shows is music as competition.
Right.
I really believe that defeats the purpose.
Yeah, music
entirely.
Music is not a competition. You know, jiu-jitsu is a competition.
Right. Yeah.
Mixed martial arts, that's a competition.
Yeah.
Music. You know, like painting, really? Is there a painting competition
right.
somewhere?
Man, oh, I'm going
that's
to
that's a
paint.
Good comparison.
Out paint
yeah.
you.
Yes, I mean, I use more paint, so I should win.
Yeah.
How does that work?
I don't know.
And see, by making it so that you could out-sing someone, it really does take away the power of singing from regular people. Singing is so therapeutic. It's so healthy
right.
for you. And the fact that people feel like they can't do it because it's going to sound a certain way because they're so used to hearing excellent people do it, I think that really is harmful. I feel like in Latin jazz, you'll hear regular men and women singing over a salsa track. You'll hear them shouting in the background. They're a part of the music. You don't have to be this exceptional singer because it really isn't about, oh, lead singer in that type of music. It really is
mm-hmm.
about the chorus, mm-hmm. about joining in, call and response, those sorts of traditions.
Right. And you know, I'm going to take it one step further. You know, and the kind of music that I like, which usually is more roots kind of music. You know, the voices that are preferred are not those voices that you hear on the radio.
Oh, of course not.
Like Cuban rumba, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
The singers, they're great singers, but they don't have that beautiful voice. Like Louis Armstrong. Let's go back to Louis Armstrong.
Okay. Let's keep it circular.
Louis Armstrong did not have the greatest voice in the world.
No.
But man, was he a singer.
Yeah. Agreed.
Right?
Okay, so...
It was soothing, too.
I mean, he was... anything he sang... Anything he played So I think we can all agree that Louis Armstrong needs needs more recognition than he has.
A plaque.
Yeah, if you look at all of music history, it seems that the not so good singer does seem to go pretty far. Bob Dylan.
Yeah, I was gonna say Bob Dylan. I mean, me personally, I enjoy Bob Dylan over the Beatles, only because of the lyrics. You know what he's talking about. The music itself is very simple, very basic chords. You know, G, D. But I mean, it was the whole thing, like Knocking on Heaven's Door, you know, that song. I mean, I can play it on the piano. I mean, I can, you know, sing it in my head, you know, but, and it's so easy that I can play it, you know, but it just strikes something in me every time I listen to it. You know, he doesn't have the greatest voice, but he means what he's singing, you know? And it's that emotion, it's that art that you don't always get that from, and definitely not in today's music.
Well, because it's not written by the person singing it. That's another big difference.
Right.
They can't sing what they mean because they couldn't possibly mean it. They're reading it off of a paper.
That's a good point.
And particularly when in American Idol, they basically tell them what they're going to sing.
Yep.
You know, it's like, you got to sing, you know, an Elton John song next week. Okay, I got to learn it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's very difficult to really deliver when they tell you what to do.
In Latin America, there was a lot of folk music too, right?
Yes.
Like one of my, and you actually turned me on to it, was Nueva Canción. To me, that I was kind of in my Bob Dylan phase still. I was getting out of that, but I don't know. How can you get out of that? But I mean, Nueva Canción was pretty similar in some kind of ways.
Yes, not only was it similar, but they were very aware of each other.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the folk singers in the United States, which early Dylan was part of the folk movement, they were very aware of what was going on in Latin America. You remember when I thought about Victor Jara, who died, you know, during the military coup, was killed by the military in Chile, and Joan Baez, who was a folk singer at the time, she dedicated in Europe a song to Victor Jara after he had passed away, you know, killed by the military. So Joan Baez was very, very popular back in those days as a folk singer. So they knew about what was going on. But, you know, talk to anyone today, you know, even the big stars like Kanye West. Does he know any Latin American music? No. He doesn't even probably, unless it's a place he can go and, you know, have fun, Cancun and Acapulco. I don't know. He has no interest.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You know, so back, you know, those days were different. And you like Bob Dylan, there's a reason why. Because, you know, he, particularly during that era, he was very much involved in what was going on.
Yeah, and he did it, I wouldn't say he did it on his own, but he did it as an independent person, you know. I don't know, I just don't see that today.
No.
I remember hearing something about Bob Dylan recently. I was bringing up the fact that so many musicians who've really spoken out on major issues, they're not here to tell you more about the story. Bob Dylan, Tupac, just to name.
Bob Dylan's still alive.
I meant Bob Marley.
Oh, Bob Marley.
Bob Marley, Tupac, John Lennon, Michael Jackson, Marvin Gaye, Paul Robeson. Let's take it all the way back. What they did with him, man. And I was bringing up the fact that musicians who speak out, they get threatened.
Oh, yeah.
And then we came to the conclusion, but not Bob Dylan. He made it. And then my friend mentioned that he had a phase where he took it all back. He started to write Christian songs.
Yeah.
Almost as if to say.
That's why I kept saying early Dylan. You noticed that? He changed.
Yeah. Right? Well, he still does blues. You know, he still does. He does come out with blues album, but it's just not the same.
He's not pushing the message.
No, he's not.
Because I really feel like they threatened him. Another one of my theories, now this is just This is all theoretical. This is where we start to go off.
Okay.
We tried to warn you. But I've got this theory about Kanye West, actually, where if you listen to his early albums, he was way talking about social issues, political things, the black community.
I think that's why he became so popular.
That's why anyone knew about him. Yeah. It's because he was bringing what I would like to call real hip-hop into the mainstream. Right now, what you have is just pop music and rap mixing together to make what it is. But that's not what hip-hop is. Hip-hop is a movement from the ghettos that was, you know, that gave blacks and Latinos and sometimes Asian Americans from those communities something to do with their time because there weren't any social programs happening from the government. So Kanye was coming from that tradition. He was keeping it very real. And I really believe that at some point he got threatened. And they said, hey, calm it down with the messages. You're getting too popular for the sort of things that you're talking about. And he said no. At which point, his mom dies very mysteriously from a very routine surgery. And next thing you know, his music is completely different. The very next album to come out after that, very misogynistic, very sad, no longer uplifting. And then he becomes the egoist that we all know him to be today.
Right.
And there's definitely a line in his career along the point where his mother died. And I don't think it was for no reason.
That happens a lot with musicians, though. Like, you know, a family member dies and all of a sudden their album after that kind of is expressing that.
Right.
Sometimes not always good, but I mean, sometimes great. Like, some like real music comes out of it.
Well, I would say that from that point on, his subject matter changed entirely. It's not like he did a memorial album to his mom where he expressed how sad he was. From that point on, he became, well, just another ignorant rapper, really. Before his mom died, he was talking about, you know, the struggle of leaving the hood. From that point on, he was like, well, I'm better than you because I did it. Right. You know, you're lesser than me. Look at me. I'm so great. I'll interrupt your Grammy speech. You know, he wasn't that kind of guy before then. And I really feel like the only reason why he was able to stay in the industry is because he turned his tables on everybody. Had he continued to do what he was doing before, he may not still be here.
But that's your theory.
Yeah, that's a theory for sure.
I don't know enough about him to discuss that. All I can tell you is that whatever he did, he's very rich because of it,
right?
Yeah, there's a lot of money involved. I don't know, and I think that's really what, unfortunately, is pioneering, you know, music right now. And, you know, going back to you, I mean, what would you recommend for... I mean, I'm not trying to be an aspiring musician, but I know a lot of friends that are. I mean, what would you recommend... what kind of habits do you think they should?
Okay, incur? So a few years ago, I would have recommended you, oh, you need to practice as much as you can. But since music has changed so much, I think you need to know the skill, you know, the tools of music. Because as we said, you know, you can still make powerful music by manipulating sounds in your computer.
Yeah.
Right? Now, the real advice that I would give is that look at music from all over the world. Because we tend to be so narrow-minded, you know, that all we know is hip-hop. All we know is jazz. Or all we know is salsa. But there's wonderful music all over the world. Musics that, you know, sometimes are very difficult to find. But it's getting easier because you go on Google and you start looking, okay, what does music from Uganda sound like?
Yes.
Who is the number one Ugandan artist? You go online. You go online and you look for it. And then maybe you find, and then go even further. Okay, so what is Ugandan, like roots music in Uganda? What is that like? That's how I got into Chinese music. I was like, you know, there was a link with Cuban music, and I started studying the instrument, and then I said, you know, I need to learn more about Chinese music. And I love Chinese music now. I learned something new.
Well, also, you know, learn the culture.
Yeah.
You know, learn the history. Learn just, you know, the struggle or what they're talking about. Or, you know, today, I mean, so many musicians just, you know, I've seen many pianists that they don't know anything about the history of jazz, or a lot of DJs that have no idea what the 90s rave scene was, you know?
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of people that just, they don't know, and they're not really focused on that. But I feel like when you don't learn that, you're taking or eliminating a piece of history, right? Because you're not moving that forward. You're not teaching that forward.
Right. You need to know where it came from. And I think a lot, I think in many things, not only music, today we tend to not care where it came from. You know, like we all go to the movies, right?
Yes.
We, I didn't go to see Star Wars, but many of my friends and my students have gone to, Star Trek. I'm a Star Trek person.
Oh man, you're just saying all these bad things.
I'm not Star
Wars. Former Star Wars. Ever since Disney bought it, I am boycotting.
Oh no.
So, but anyways, we know what the current films are, right? But how many of us has gone back and seen movies that were created before we were even born?
Or people who watch, even for the, like the Marvel movies, nobody has ever read the comics.
Right.
Oh man, so it's true. Like, that's one of those movements I'm very offended by, as someone who grew up reading comic books, and then all of a sudden everyone wants to be interested.
Like how many?
It made us special that we liked those things, and Star Wars included.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool because other people didn't like it, and now everyone's into Star Wars, and it's just like that's
I'm not.
That's not why. Thank you.
Everyone.
Thank you for not. But when I'm seeing these huge billboards and it's like, what? Star Wars on a billboard? That's like the opposite of what Star Wars was for me growing up. It wasn't about billboard things. It was about, hey, I'm a low-key, nerdy kind of dude into some low-key, nerdy type of things. Now it's perfectly mainstream.
Well, I mean, even like you were going with like older movies, you know. People don't go see, I mean, go watch Eyes Wide Shut, you know, or go watch, you know, Casino or, what's that?
The original Star Wars, it was an older movie. It was one of those things you used to have to go dig up, and then they brought it here for everyone to be bored with.
But I'm going to go even further. How many have actually watched a silent film?
I have.
Ooh.
What is it? I forgot what it's called.
Nosferatu?
Yeah.
That's a great film.
That is a great film that honestly does not get enough respect today. I mean,
well,
the guy...
Well, it gets respect from the people that love films.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I mean, not the regular...
The general public.
Because
yeah.
they've never seen a silent film.
Or think, Charlie Chaplin, too.
It's boring. Right. It's silent.
No, even if it's just black and white, they can't take that.
No. Oh, I've met people that will say, oh, no, it's black and white. Why would I go?
Like, Why would I go?
Like even, you know, Woody Allen did a few black and white because he won it. There was color, but he said, no, it has to be black and white.
Well, also today, I mean, people can't stand instrumental music or just non-vocal music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just listen to the sound. I mean, John Luther Adam, I recommend you.
Okay.
I'll check
it out.
Yeah, I think you would love him. I just love meditating to that. Just driving. I would listen to some albums or some other. Even there's a movement right now in electronic music where, you know, it's all about repetition, but small, but almost sounds acoustic kind of sound, but it's electronic music, but it's trying to replicate the sound of real acoustic sounds, but it's done in a very metronomic way where it's repetitive, but it's meant to be meditative. When you listen to that and you're driving down the 110 on the bus and
you fall asleep.
No, you don't. I literally felt like, oh my God, we're all ants. Like, all these people are moving, going crazy, doing nuts, and you're just watching them. Because I like to take the bus. I take the Silver Line from the South Bay all the way to downtown. And you're going down the 110, and you see all these things happening. And it makes you... you were saying, I mean, it says a lot about our culture. But to sit back and just watch... Analyze yourself for a bit. Analyze what's around you. Analyze the music that you listen to. Analyze the films you watch or the books you read.
But you're asking a lot of people.
What? No,
yes. They actually think about what they do. Most people don't. Because it's easier not to. I'm going to talk about vegan lifestyle again, if you guys allow me.
Hold on. Well, you know, we're running out of time.
Like most people eat without thinking what they're putting inside their body.
Yes.
You go to McDonald's. Why would anyone go to McDonald's?
After all we know. After all the documentaries, all the books,
I saw the billboard. McDonald's is listening to us now.
Oh, yeah.
They're listening. They've heard that we don't like their food.
Yeah.
And now they're listening.
Yeah, the breakfast all day.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what spearheaded their recent conference call.
So you can get your McMuffin all day.
Look, so if people, I agree. I mean, I enjoy meat. I love eating meat. But I don't eat meat every day. And when I do eat meat, I want it to be, you know, grass-fed or, you know, a good chunk.
Because they die happy.
Right.
Or game meat, you know.
I was being sarcastic.
I know. I mean, I prefer game meat, but whatever. I know. But, I mean, at least I'm conscious about what I'm putting into my diet, you know. And you're right. There's just so many people that, you know, they eat candy bars all day.
Mm-hmm.
They drink soda like as if it was water.
Soda will get you.
It's like there's how many packs of sugar in there?
Oh, it's not the sugar. It's the corn syrup.
Oh, jeez.
The corn syrup is poison.
Yep. Straight up. The body doesn't know how to process it yet.
Yeah.
We need another million years of evolution before we're ready for some corn syrup.
If it were sugar, it's not that bad. You know, like, I have friends that drink Coke, and they go, you know, drink the Mexican Coke, please. Don't drink the American
Coke. It's real sugar.
Mexican Coke is made with real sugar.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
It's better for you than that corn syrup. Don't drink a lot of it. We'll get diabetes. But,
yeah.
You know, it's better. Just don't drink the corn syrup stuff. Mm. You know, like if I drink a soda, I try to get a natural soda.
Right.
You know, natural with natural flavors, with you
what
know,
what does that mean,
cane
natural
sugar.
Flavors, though?
It doesn't have...
They literally synthesize flavors these days.
I know.
Where if they say that it's lime and then it's natural flavors, that means that the flavor comes from lime and not from other things that aren't the lime.
Not a chemical that imitates the sound, yeah. the taste.
The taste.
You know, so there's like Hansen's sodas that they sell at Trader Joe's.
Oh, okay.
They're really good. They taste well.
Hansen's is good.
And it's natural.
Okay.
You know, it's not chemical tastes or anything. So if I do, which maybe once or twice a year, I go for the natural thing.
Okay. All right.
You got to be conscious of, you know, so that's why I was saying you're asking people too much. If we don't really think about what we eat, you're asking them to think about what they look at, what they listen to when they turn on the TV.
Right. I think that that's one of the major points we brought up here is that we are dealing with a sleeping mass.
Yes.
The good music, the good information, the good food, these things are available if you want them, if you want to know about them. But it's not like it's going to be fed to you through your television or from your fast food spot. You need to seek the deep. You need to seek the roots.
I know we're gonna need to wrap it up soon, but
no problem.
I just wanted to ask you one, you know, just one or two points of advice, because that's a good point that we are talking about a mass population that is just not awake at just cultural things in their own culture. You know, you work at a university where, I don't know, there's what, every year there's over 3,000 new students coming in here.
Hmm.
I mean, what do you recommend these young, fresh students right from high school coming to, not specifically Cal State LA, but any university?
Well, I have one piece of advice, is that learn as much as you can. What I encounter today is people come here to get a piece of paper that says they have a bachelor's degree. But that's not the goal. The goal is to learn. So let's say you're a business major. If all you do once you're done with your GEs is take business courses, You cheated yourself because there's an opportunity to learn about astronomy, to learn about history, to learn about music. But if all you did was focus, you know, I got to get my little piece of paper that says I'm a business major, you missed the point.
Yeah. Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you for coming on here. I really appreciate doing this.
It's been fun.
Yeah. I know. I'm listening to the trumpet, too. It's like,
yeah.
Sounds
he's
great.
He's doing a famous run, actually.
Yeah. It's a Dizzy Gillespie line that he's playing.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, it was a pleasure having you. Hopefully,
thank you.
Would you be willing to do this again sometime in the
future? I had a great time, so yes, anytime.
Okay, great. For everybody else, you know, you can find Dr. DeCastro at Cal State LA. You just email him, send him a bunch of hilarious stuff. Just bombard
nice
his email.
Stuff. Nice stuff.
And of course, you can always download this podcast for free on Stitcher and iTunes. And check out our website, abspodcast.com. Or if you have any questions or you want us to cover a topic, you can always email us at anotherbspodcast@gmail.com. All right, guys. That's about it. Have a good weekend.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.